This Week in Nature is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for your free 30 days trial at audibletrial.com/TWIA for your free audiobook. Welcome back to This Week in the Asia, episode 120. And this is the show. Essentially, we dissect news that happen around Asia or news around the world that actually affects Asia. Today, we have Speedy back in Pattaya. Hey, Speedy, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Still a lot of work to finish post events, but really, really, really awesome. How long will you be in Thailand this time?
Until the kid pops. Plus wow. Some amount of time after that. Yeah.
Okay. When are you expecting your new project to be out?
Yeah, it's tough to say. You can't really control it, right? So it's probably any day now.
Wow. Looking forward for that.
I want it out. I think it'll be easier out than the way it is now.
In case we don't have the chance to wish you congratulations or what, yeah. So, well, congratulations in advance then.
Thanks very much.
Also in Beijing, we have Josh Ong. And welcome on the show, Josh.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, this is, you are quite recently new to the Next Web. And what's your general beat over there?
So I'll be doubling up on China and gadgets and hopefully the intersection of both. But yeah, I'll be covering global gadgetry and then specifically looking at the China region.
Okay. And previously you were, what were you doing before this?
Yeah, previously I was at Apple Insider. Mm-hmm. So covering that beat, you know, Apple rumors and what have you.
Yeah, so you're pretty much tired with Apple rumors today, right?
Yeah, I mean, I keep my keep my ear on the ground for that, personally and professionally.
Okay, so before we start, what phone are you using?
What phone am I using?
Yes.
The iPhone 4S.
Okay, fair enough. So you're a man who walks the talk and.
Did you think he was going to say Android or something?
I do not know. You get a lot of interesting bandit phones in China. So if I was there, I would probably use one of those bandit phones.
Really?
Yeah.
They're worse than like the normal Android stuff, I think.
I don't know. I'll just buy and throw, I guess. Yeah. Okay, so we'll start off with the biggest story in terms of what's happening. It's not really got to do with Asia, although Samsung is an Asia company. Samsung versus Apple, I mean, this is the big lawsuit. They are suing each other in terms of different patent violation. Apple claims that Samsung is copying them, and on the other hand, you have Samsung who wants to get a reasonable license to some of their patent. I mean, guys, end of the world, or they will come, like every single lawsuit, they will come to a good settlement. Josh, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think this is two giants that are colliding. It's a huge thing to watch. One of the fascinating things I think is just being able to see the stuff that comes up that normally you wouldn't see from all these confidential things. But I think ultimately it'll get resolved and people will move on. But it's going to set a precedent for other cases, I think.
Smitty?
This is tough. I mean, it's hard to really know what you're seeing yet, right? I think because there's so much showmanship and all this. But I mean, it does, you know, this is just going to get into, like, is this really copying? Like, and is there such a thing as copying, or is everything like prior art? I mean, this is tough, right? I mean, it's not like I have time to sit there and pore through all the facts, right? And I know other people are doing it, but I do think that Samsung's come off a little bit goofy with releasing the things that were told that shouldn't have been in court. Like, I think that just kind of shows some desperation. And if you're showing desperation, it's probably because something's a little bit wrong. I also thought Google's kind of comments that, even though they don't admit to it, but were from like old stuff where they told Samsung to stop copying Apple, kind of looks damaging. So it feels like Samsung's a little desperate, but it's, you know, these court things, I don't know if they're really reality, right? It's going to be, but I do think it's going to be a big deal, right? Like, one way or another, because I think either Apple's on to something with what they're going to get Samsung on. If they're not, I think they're going to change maybe how they compete with guys like that. If you notice with their new phone, right, they're not using Samsung as much as they used to with some of the new components, is one of the things I was reading. So, you know, I mean, long term, you know, maybe Samsung kind of wins this and they get into the battle of the phone battle, but they're not seen as a component guy for other people, because it kind of feels like they get to play both sides of the fence, right?
I mean, Samsung is a mega huge company. It has construction, they are number one in actually selling TVs and so many things. It's hard to not pick a fight with Samsung. And I mean, Josh, do you think this is all part of a negotiation to get cheaper components, or is Apple really concerned about Samsung copying them?
Well, I think Apple is interested in defending itself. You know, there's some evidence that Steve Jobs viewed it as a vendetta, that he took it personally. But I think at this point, it seems like with Tim Cook at the helm, it is very much about them just trying to draw these lines about what they think is fair and what's not. Now, certainly where Samsung would draw those lines are different than where Apple would, and that's where the disagreement comes. But I think if they don't defend it, they're going to lose ground in terms of what their intellectual property is worth. You know, someone compared it this week to the Fender guitar design, and how, you know, Fender didn't really aggressively protect its guitar design, so then later on it was too generic.
Yeah, I remember very early on when the Samsung Galaxy, the first Samsung Galaxy was launched, and that was one of Samsung's early attempts in the Android phone. And I think we were out with Dave McClure over in Singapore. That, yeah, Dave was like, this totally looks so much like an iPhone, and you get that feel. But I guess in another news, I mean, Samsung is doing really well. They became the number one handset manufacturer in the world, and the Samsung Galaxy S3 surpassed 10 million sales in less than 2 months. I mean, these are like fantastic figures. So, do you think Apple is actually really just jealous and suing them for that?
No. Because this started long before those kind of numbers started to come out, right? And like, I don't think Apple cares that there's another big player. I don't really think this is what Apple's about, right? I think Apple's trying to build an end-to-end kind of environment for people who appreciate those type of objects, right? Whether it be the Apple TV and your phone and all these things kind of working together, you know, that. And I think, you know, Samsung's also trying to do that. They're not doing it very well. But then Google's trying to do that. And then one of them licenses the other person's stuff. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's what this is about for Apple. I think Apple felt they have, like, a true feeling that there was stuff just kind of being copied, right? Whether it be very, very specific to the iPad or to the phone. I think they're just trying to defend it. I think Samsung's gone up and, you know, I think what people don't talk about is I don't think Samsung won this market from Apple, right? Apple just keeps growing a market they didn't even exist in. What, when did the iPhone come out? 5 years ago or whatever? I mean, so who's losing here? It's RIM who's lost. It's Nokia that's lost. It's HP that's lost. It's LG that's losing, right? I don't think Apple's losing to Samsung. I think every other player is getting obliterated by the two big platform guys. And that's Samsung and Apple, right? And, of course, Google, right? I think it's going to be interesting. see what Google does with Motorola, right? So I don't think this is a Samsung versus Apple. This is kind of the two big players coming into their own. You know, I think Apple's going to have a huge end of the year with a new phone, right? Like, numbers nobody's seen before, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, let me think about this. I think there's room enough for Apple and Samsung. I don't think that the competition's an issue. Samsung's trying to spin it and say, you know, look, this is just competition and Apple can't handle it. But I do think Smitty's right. Like, Nokia, RIM, and some of the other players are the ones that have lost. I mean, a lot of the share has been eaten up, and Apple and Samsung are, you know, laughing their way to the bank. If anything, you know, this lawsuit's a distraction for the two from continuing to plow into the smartphone market, the tablets, et cetera. So,
yeah, it's a huge distraction. I mean, look, Johnny Ive's having to sit at these things every day. I mean, and I think you're right, Daniel. It's also kind of shown like how some of their machinery works, right? But I don't know. I mean, I think all the other guys are just getting creamed now, right? And it, you know, that's why ATC's pulled out of Korea and all these other kind of things. But I don't think Apple's sitting there saying, hey, how are we going to compete with Samsung? I think they're sitting there saying, how are we going to keep doing the things that we've been doing well? And they were trying to kind of call a spade, which is, hey, our whole playbook's kind of being copied by one particular vendor, right? So, but who knows? I just don't know if the realities come out of these court things. It's all legal speak, right?
Yeah. Oh, well.
I do think one of...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I do think one of the externalities or the effects of this, the high profile of this lawsuit, is that it's got people talking about patent reform on a level that I think is almost in the living room. You know, I hear people asking, so what do you think about patents? What needs to be changed? And if that helps this system to get reformed, I think that's something that is beneficial for all the companies out of this.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing, right? Like, one of the big problems that's stemming from all this is I think Apple's kind of fighting on turf that, you know, maybe they wouldn't want to be there if they felt it was an equal playing field, but the whole patent thing's just a mess, right? But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to, you know, I wonder if it actually comes down to like all the way down to a jury settlement or if somebody cries uncle before it gets there. I mean,
yeah, with all this lawsuit, you'll probably get someone cries uncle or someone just like, they'll settle it off of court. So, you keep seeing a lot of upcoming designs from Apple and Samsung coming in from these court kits. I don't think either company wants this to happen anymore. So, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Any final thoughts before we move on?
No.
No.
I tried to use Android phones again, and I can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talk about this every week. It's like,
well, I had to kind of carry around and use it because I'm testing some stuff, and I just can't do it. I think what happens is you get so used to something. It's not so much is do I sit there and argue that one's better than the other, but you get kind of used to something, right?
Well, I think in some case, I mean, this is a personal anecdotal evidence for me using three Android phones that I think in some cases that there are a lot of stuff that Androids need to back up. I mean, it's a good experience and all, but at the same time, there are always this tiny issue like the battery life sucks. It sucks crazy. I mean, I have to charge like 3 or 4 times a day, and yeah, I didn't have this issue with the old iPhone. So yeah, perhaps it's only me. Okay, so let's. Josh, do you actually go on Weibo?
Yeah, I mean, I have an issue personally on Weibo, which is my Chinese reading level is just not high enough for Weibo to scan well. You know, I mean, I can pull a post and kind of slowly read it, but if I'm just trying to flip through it like I would Twitter, I mean, I'm not going to get much information.
Well,
Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I said the other reason you can't get much information. I mean, this Olympic this year is supposed to be the Twitter Olympics, where Twitter reported that 9.66 million tweets about the Olympics during the opening ceremony, but there is over 119 million tweets from Sina Weibo about the London Olympics. So, yeah.
So the whole Weibo's interface is in Chinese, right? You couldn't even like navigate the interface even without Chinese, right?
Yeah, you can.
Well, they actually, there's at least the iPhone app, there is an English kind of translated interface. I mean, it's pretty rudimentary, so some of the translations are a little off, or not everything is translated over. But it's a start. I mean, in terms of being able to know which button does what, it's relatively there.
Yeah, so I mean, this is quite interesting. Weibo has already shoot up at least for the past 2 years. Past year or so, in terms of its popularity, and it's the both of the Weibo. I mean, the Sina one and Tencent's Weibo is perhaps number one and number two in terms of social network in China. I mean, what do you think? Do you see this trend continuing? Or has it reached a saturation point or so?
No, I think Weibo is here to stay, and it's massive. I mean, it's entering a point where I think it's just a cultural phenomenon where it's embedding itself in the culture.
Isn't that similar to Twitter in America though? I mean, I always totally agreed if China wasn't a protectionist market, right? But if China had a free and open market, would Weibo beat Twitter?
No, I don't think it's ingrained
the same way Twitter's ingrained to me, right? Like, it's just a part of my life now, right?
I mean, I've been out of the States for 4 years, but I think I would say that Weibo is actually a larger part of Chinese culture than Twitter is in America, personally. But I say that from afar, you know.
But isn't Twitter like kind of a global thing apart from China? So like it's. I mean, I always wonder how these things would all work if they were all like competing with each other in their same countries, right? Like.
Right.
I mean, it obviously wouldn't be what it is today. Now that doesn't mean Twitter wins and Weibo doesn't. I mean, it could be Weibo gets big because it's used everywhere, and I don't know. I mean, it's a. But yeah, it's obviously like more ingrained in Chinese culture because it's only in Chinese, right?
Yeah.
But,
and, recently, right. Have you guys seen the TED Talk by the blogger Michael Ante about Weibo?
I didn't finish watching it, but what I saw that was great.
Yeah. So essentially, a lot of the Weibo is also slightly political, although there's a heavy censorship from the government. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why Weibo can go. They use a lot of poetry or phrases in terms of talking about certain political issues or certain things about the government. So it's quite interesting. I think I'll put a link up on the show notes about that talk. I mean, if you want to understand about the whole relationship with China and its firewall.
Yeah.
What has Weibo done to like QQ and like stuff like that? And like
QQ those has, things are
just
I mean QQ
they're just
is,
not the in thing anymore, right?
Also, if I understand correctly, QQ is still really strong among the rural communities who have internet access. I mean, it's still one of those things that I keep hearing about, like people to add each other on QQ. But Tencent itself has sort of doubled down on Weibo. The last time I visited Tencent's HQ, I mean, that was pretty much what they were talking all about. When they talk, there's clearly a division in terms of what they've been doing in terms of QQ and what is going to be the future. That is going to be Weibo.
You know, the thing with Tencent Weibo is actually I don't know anyone personally who uses it regularly, and that's troubling to me. I was talking with a Microsoft executive this week, and he was saying that he really believes that the Tencent Weibo users are quite young, that they're kind of the QQ generation who built their loyalty with that service and then moved over to microblogging. But I, you know, when I go to these conferences here, they have one side of the room will have the Sina Weibo projector screen, you know, live feed. And the other side of the room will have the Tencent one. But to me, like, it's not balanced, you know? Like, when people say Weibo, at least the people that I end up being around, they mean Sina Weibo. They don't actually mean anything else, really. Except if you're really in kind of industry talk where you're trying to discuss the different competitors.
Why is it named the same?
So Weibo is actually a short message. It's like a...
It's so, like, their short message service, so they call it Weibo, huh?
Yeah, so that's Sina sort of capitalized on that particular phrase, and that's why it's, they have a Weibo, what is it, Weibo.com, is it? That's the site.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And
yeah, they got the jump on the other guys, so, you know, it's kind of like Kleenex and tissue, or, I don't, you know, things like that, where yeah. Early on they embedded in people's brains the idea that Weibo was Sina. And now the other companies are having to kind of back, you know, take some of that back.
And the QQ one is actually t.qq.com, actually. So, well, it's and the QQ Weibo is at sorry, the Tencent Weibo is usually called Tencent Weibo in this entirety, and most people can just log in with their user ID and. So the QQ ID or the email address.
Interesting.
Okay, so let's move on to Evernote. Actually, there's a recent article on the 31st of July. Evernote is tracking on hitting 100 million users by end of 2013 and looking to engage Southeast Asia developers to develop more across the platform. This is like kind of a trend that we've been seeing a lot, that all these companies who are looking to tap in the developer pool within Southeast Asia. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, and just the whole coming to sing and all that. Yeah, yeah, this is what's the guy's name? That's the guy who does Asia for them.
Oh, different guy.
The guy who does Asia, I'm totally spacing, and he's going to kill me. It's
Dmitry Sutko, is it?
No. They have a guy who's actually, I believe he's moving to Asia.
Is it Troy?
Troy, yes, thank you.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
I believe Troy's moving to Singapore, actually. I thought so at one point. But yeah, I mean, I think all these guys kind of see, of course, where did I see today on Pando Daily that you can't call anything Southeast Asia. It's not technically a region. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, come on. This, everybody kind of like wants to get at the masses that are supposedly in Southeast Asia, right? So they're looking. I think Troy had been coming through Singapore, you know, for over a year now, over a year and a half, I think, checking in on the scene and figuring out where to do stuff. So I think it's pretty cool. I'm a huge user of Evernote, so I love the thing. I don't use all its crazy little side things, but for its core service, I think it's awesome. I think, you know, they're doing all the language stuff too, so it's pretty, you know, it makes sense. You know, whether or not they set up shop, I don't think they'll do development or anything, but I think, you know, they're in Korea because Korea is kind of its own thing. I think they kind of treat Japan the same way, but they're looking at Southeast Asia as kind of a unit they want to tackle, so it's pretty huge. I mean, these guys are killing it. Do you guys use Evernote at all?
Yeah, I use it here and there. It's not really my main note taking, but I use it to scan business card these days, in terms of, because they have character recognition, so you can do searches after that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. It's like,
yeah, what's the? I can't remember the Pando Daily article. I want to read about that actually.
Is it Pando? It's the. It's an article talking about, I'll try to find it while we're talking. It's really funny because it's someone gets on some guy, actually a foreigner gets on an Asian guy for calling Southeast Asia like a region.
is it Ben Joff who is doing that again or what?
No, it's not. It's. I'm going to grab it right now. I'm just trying to talk fast. It's, here it is. So it's somebody talking about the Chinese guy who actually wants to work with the Samir brothers.
Ah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
My name is Josh. It's the guy did Erzu.
Okay.
So it is Lee.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Korean Lee. I got it. It's Adrian Lee.
Okay.
Is the guy's name. And yeah. He got bought out, or he's doing something with the Samware brothers. And then on this, I just gave you the link. And then on this thing,
yeah, got it.
Some guy tears into him on the second comment. Southeast Asia doesn't exist. Only intellectually lazy foreigners believe otherwise. It's like, really? Because everybody I know who's also Southeast Asian kind of talks about Southeast Asia. It's
Let me see, who's this guy? I mean, I don't recognize.
Brian Bells.
Yeah, no, I do not know.
I don't know him either.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's look at this guy. Oh, he has 5 points to his credit.
Yeah, 3 comments. Anyway, I just thought it was really funny because, I don't know, I mean, I've never thought, I hear people kind of, I mean, come on, Daniel, you probably do too, right? We say Southeast Asia and don't think anything of it. And
yeah, I mean, Southeast Asia, me, it's like, it's
my
like,
mind, I
it, it's a place. Yeah. Of course, it's not one market, but it's a place.
Yeah, it's a country, and I guess it's not an autonomous region, but it's a region.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, I thought this was pretty funny. I don't know who the Richard Lee guy is, or Adrian Lee, sorry. So, but he's, I guess, a Chinese guy wanting to do stuff with Samware guys in Southeast Asia. So I came across that comment today, and I kind of laughed.
Yeah, I mean, this Brian dude, he has 3 comments in the site and 3 comments who are on this article. It could be a troll or something like that, so.
Yeah.
It's just funny, though. Yeah.
Well, it's the same case you want to say that North America.
Yeah.
What, that we call North America?
Yeah, I mean, come on, there's Mexico, America, United States of America, and Canada.
I think it is North America. It doesn't just like, and then we say South America for that big region below it. Like yeah, it's exactly. Not
so
not odd to me at all, right?
Yeah, that's right. Really good. Oh well. So let's moving on to article that you submitted about dear Mark Zuckerberg. Smitty, when you want to elaborate a bit on this?
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys are following this whole thing or know who Dalton Caldwell is. So Dalton Caldwell was originally, I think his claim to fame was like iMeme, one of the first music startups, like MP3 kind of startups. Didn't go well. I don't think the guy's had a big win yet, to be honest, unless I haven't done my history. So he's then started working on something that I guess is similar to App Center. I don't know if you guys played with App Center in Facebook. It's kind of like their answer to the iOS marketplace and Google thing where your Facebook app, which even if it just takes a login, kind of becomes an app, and you go make this App Center page. So you have like a landing page, and people can rate your app. So it's their marketplace, right? I guess prior to this, he kind of showed them his stuff, which was he was building the same thing, but as a, you know, an outside marketplace, but based on Facebook and everything. And supposedly it just turned into that, like, they kind of knew it, his stuff, and they were working on their stuff, and supposedly they kind of said, like, well, you should just get acquired by us because, you know, net-net, we're kind of building the same thing, and since we're building it, it'll be bigger than your thing, that kind of thing. He kind of took offense to it because he doesn't believe in the whole acqui-hire thing because he thinks it's crap, and he was like, you know, if you really want to buy my product, great, if you don't, you know, but, you know, so he got into the whole rationale of, like, you know, and then he brings up where other people are running into things that they built on Facebook and Facebook kind of deciding to either buy it and squash it, which I guess makes people money, or not treating it as easily on top of the platform. Like, it's a pretty long article. But so he, Dalton, also based on this and what's happening with Twitter, right, which, you know, it's not being talked about a lot, but there's kind of this feeling that Twitter is starting to close down, not, you know, like with what they did to Instagram and some of the things that they're doing, that he's basically saying, hey, these platforms aren't really platforms. They're ad-based consumer models that look like a platform, but when they want to pull back the platform when it suits them, that's what they do. And that's what he wrote about. So he basically writes to Zuckerberg and kind of lays it all out there. He doesn't name names, but he names titles of people.
Have you seen this, Josh?
Yeah, he's.
No, I haven't actually, but let me pull that up.
Guys, you're head in the valley now. You're not going to get investment. And then a few of the big VCs, like, well, not McClure's big, but he's well known, right? McClure and a couple of the other guys have tweeted, like, we don't feel that way at all about this guy. He's just being honest. And Dalt kind of tweets, he doesn't give a rat's ass what people say about him. But it's pretty interesting. And then all of this net is he's kind of put his money where his mouth is, and he's pivoted his entire company onto this thing called app.net, which is basically a Twitter-like service as a user and as a company. So he's basically building the open Twitter, but as a paid service. He's doing a Kickstarter, but through his own stuff. He's kind of, I think if he gets 500,000 or something, he's going to do it. But I think he's close, or he's like halfway there. But it's interesting. It's really like, it's, you know, I wrote about it and put it up on my stuff because I kind of the way I feel, like when you look at Twitter and Facebook and you're like trying to build a company like Spool, you're always very cognizant of like, hey, is this thing that I'm going to use eventually going to come back to bite me because they'll take it away or they'll start charging for it or they don't charge for it or they'll want an ad on it. So he kind of pokes holes in the whole platform thing and how he thinks this is all going to change. So it's really heavy, and it's quite, you know, it went down on Twitter last night pretty hard with people saying your ass is dead in the valley, and then other people, you know, it's quite the, I think a few people have written about it. I think Pando Daily did and somebody else, but it's all being played out in the open. And the cool thing is this guy's building this other like utility kind of at the same time, right? Which I gotta hand it to him. His conviction is pretty strong, right? He's not just talking about this stuff. He's trying to build it, right?
Well, there's many ways to build a startup, and well, whatever works, man. I mean, like some people don't consider acqui-hire as a success, and some people do. And as long as you get your investment, you're happy with it. I guess to each his own.
Yeah, I think the only reason he kind of got onto the thing was, is this kind of killing innovation, right? Like these acqui-hires, because they're people, the big guys are using it to get people out of the way, right? And that's to me, because I think that's actually happening, right? For sure it's happening.
Yeah,
so.
But for sure, I mean, it's going to be the same case where these people will go and work like a year or two in Facebook and they have money and they go on to, they either invest in the next young startup or they go and start their own thing with much more experience and much more resources. You never know how this kind of thing.
You don't. It's interesting. But I just think it's interesting that someone this, you know, fairly well known in the valley is kind of being all open about this, right? He's not hiding behind the curtain. He's kind of showing you the man behind the curtain. So
I mean, coming from Southeast Asia, I mean, this is the actual reason. Southeast Asia, we don't have much acquisition going on. So acqui-hire or whatever acquisition is good, and it's good, man. It's something the ecosystem need.
Yep. It's interesting stuff. It'll be fun to watch it play out. So yeah. We'll see if writes him a dear letter back.
Josh, do you have any thoughts on this before we move on to the break?
Yeah, well, you know, it kind of dovetails with the cash tags issue this week, which was, you know, StockTwit's founder claims that Twitter told him that they weren't interested in developing the stock cash tag, dollar sign,
yeah,
clickable feature, and then, you know, Twitter rolled it out this week, and you know he was pretty upset on his blog, and I understand, you know, he's trying to build a business, you know, using this platform, but I think when you build on top of anything that another company has built, whether it be a Twitter, Facebook, Apple, you know, Android, etc., you have to realize that you're on somebody else's foundation, and it's risky, you know. They could release your feature, you know, they could close down the thing, you close down the ecosystem, they could just go out of business or something. And so I do think these platforms, they're conditional, you know, and unless someone has decided to make it kind of generously open source, I mean you're at the whim of these companies. And it's certainly something to keep in mind.
I think the only problem is that, like, it felt like to me that, like, maybe not so much with Facebook, because I've never trusted them anyway, but Twitter was kind of developing this ecosystem that a lot of their strength has been because people have built things like better clients than they have, and guys like StockTwits build things. But StockTwits is tough for me because it feels like he was all about Twitter, right? And they could move in that direction. But I still think it kind of like people are going to start to fear building on these platforms, right? And then if less right. people build on these platforms aren't actually as strong as people think they are, right? So right. I think it's a weird storm. And I think they, you know, and that's why I like the app.net thing, because he's basically saying, hey, this is going to cost you money to use this thing from day one, right? And this is why I like Instapaper, like Amazon. Like, they're upfront about this thing's for money, and if you want a free service, go somewhere else, right? So I agree with you that it is like a shaky foundation. That's what I wrote about today on my blog. But at the same time, these shaky foundations weren't even around until people started using them as foundations, right? So it's kind of like a catch 22, right? Like, they got big because of some people, but then they turn around and say, need these people anymore, right? So it's tough. I mean, it really made me think a lot about building products. Like, you know, you almost don't want to use anything that isn't something that you just pay money for.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it circles back to the pat. I mean, it's kind of a different issue, but the whole standards essential patent issue. You know, where we have companies who put up their patents to get them into a standard and then try and turn around and wield them against their competitors. And that it never would have become a standard if that was what it was, if everybody knew down the road that was what was going to happen. So there needs to be a kind of keeping of promises to be able to build these platforms.
Agreed. It's a tough one.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess this is something we have to monitor, and let's take a break and thank our sponsor, Audible. Josh, do you listen to any audiobooks?
No, I don't actually. I mean, the last audiobook I got was Samuel Jackson's "Go the F to Sleep."
Okay.
So. That's kind of the level of reading. You know, frankly, the issue is, as a writer, I have very little time where my brain's not dealing with words, and so putting in more words is difficult. But you know, but I was talking to a guy over at Baidu, and he recommended that I take up like some kind of mindless Xbox game, you know, and kind of get into. Turn on a podcast or an audiobook then. So maybe that's what I need to do.
Well, if you actually want a free audiobook, I mean, you can head to audibletrial.com/TWIA and get one free credit. And I guess I want to recommend one book if Smitty don't have a pick this week.
I don't. I'm sorry. I'm still haven't finished my other one.
Okay, so this is something I'm going to start. It's called Ready Player One by Ernie Klein. It's narrated by Will Wheaton. Essentially, it's about this billionaire. He created this virtual reality program called the Oasis. And after he passed away, he set some kind of a challenge in the game itself that if people can actually solve all this puzzle, the person can inherit his wealth. So you can check it out. I mean, it's a lot of homage to the 80s pop culture in terms of like games and etc. So Ready Player One. And I think currently there's a contest going on that he's giving away a DeLorean for...
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, but that you need to check out the book, actually. So you can head to audibletrial.com/TWIA for your one credit. And if you do not like the service, you can cancel anytime within 30 days. So, yeah. Thanks, Audible, for the sponsor. So, okay. So, let's move up to Asian Radar. And so, essentially, this is a segment that we want to do in terms of looking at what are the interesting startups that we have come across within this week. And so, Josh, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I wrote up this week a profile on Initial View, which is a startup based here in Beijing that I think is quite interesting and has had a couple announcements this week that were, you know, a step forward for them. The main announcement they had was bringing on a senior advisor who's the top admissions kind of expert in the U.S. So what Initial View does is they provide a a video platform to do interviews in China with prospective students looking to study abroad. Oh, and then they're partnering with universities to provide, you know, an admissions tool for officers to kind of scan these video, unscripted video interviews, and then, you know, make their, add that to their decision-making process.
And they're based in Beijing.
Yeah, they're based in Beijing, and I think the reason why it's so interesting to me is because the issue of application fraud is so big. You know, I noticed this study from what is it, Zilch or Zinch, China. It's, you know, this is a consultancy that said as many as like 90% of personal statements are not written by the applicants. And let me make sure that that's correct. Yeah, Zinch China said that 90% of recommendation letters are fake as of 2010 from their analysis of applications coming out of China, and that's just appalling. And it's an issue that foreign university is going to have to deal with as more Chinese students look to study abroad. The financial viability is there as the middle class grows, but standardizing these applications and finding and resolving the issue of credibility, it's a huge concern for coming years. And I think Initial View is really trying to provide a solution. And it's interesting.
Okay. What's the website actually? Initialview.com? Or?
Yeah. Initialview.com.
Okay.
Nice. So they have a couple of demo videos and you can kind of jump around. They also have dabbled in job interviews as well. So I actually did a job interview with, you know, via their platform with a technology company. And so the manager back in Palo Alto was able to kind of watch my interview, which I filmed here in Beijing. So that's handy too. I mean, I think they're open to expanding beyond just students, but I think they've identified Chinese students as one of the main groups that has this need to be able to express themselves to these admissions officers.
Okay. How about yourself, Smitty? Any interesting thing?
Yeah, I've been checking out the sharing engine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not doing anything with it. I've just been looking at it and kind of like keeping tabs on it. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it'll be interesting to see the uptake on it. I mean, it's all about kind of people using it to build other experiences, right? It's like the idea is you can build, you know, the Airbnbs or anything. It's like an engine for building sharing capability, right?
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool because it has a lot of like social aspects as far as, you know, people could use it to build social good kind of things. And he's this guy based in Singapore, used to be with Amazon Web Services. And yeah, it's cool stuff. And he's getting a little bit of, had a few people talking about him this past week. So, yeah.
Yeah, we should get Jeremy on again.
It's thesharingengine.com.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jeremy doesn't have a active Twitter account. So every time we'll just refer to the founder of the sharing engine over on Twitter. Okay.
I'll see you in one of these days.
For myself, it's essentially, I mean, there's perks and, just got a tweet from someone. Okay, so essentially what I've been looking at is something similar to perks that's happening around Malaysia in terms of loyalty-based thing in your, well, digitizing your wallet. So there's a US-based company called Simple, was recently launched, and there's a couple of Malaysian-based company, including Chop Chop, full disclosure, I'm an advisor to that, Chop Inc., and several other people who are entering this space, basically. Trying to digitize your wallet, B, trying to consolidate loyalty programs or in your smartphone. So that is what I've been seeing around that's happening in Malaysia. I haven't really been up to date on what's going on in Singapore, actually. So, yeah. Okay. So, any other trends that you guys notice?
Trends? Can't say I got one off the top of my head. No.
Okay, no worries about that.
Buried in the Olympics, so things are just quiet.
Did you guys see the qualifier for the Korean and the China doubles?
For doubles, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so Josh, you know exactly what's going on. Because both of the team actually qualified for the quarterfinals or semi quarterfinals, and so they were basically just how would I describe it? Just simply playing. So every time they would just hit the net to game point, and it's such a weird game.
Well, it was a farce, and I think the crowd knew it, and they were booing, and the officials clearly have it's an embarrassment to them, and it's an embarrassment to the Olympics, really.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
They kind of admitted that they did actually do this, but they didn't think it was a big deal because it's supposed to get, like, they didn't think it was a big deal because you can do this in other sports. So they kind of admitted that that's what they did, right? It's like, pretty cheesy, right?
Well, I think they're experimenting with this new round robin. You know, it used to be elimination where clearly you can't throw a game. And so they need to go back to the drawing board because it didn't work this year. You know, I mean, they need to find a way to make it so that people aren't trying to fix these matchups and, you know, aren't playing, matches that don't matter or that don't count. You know, that's certainly a problem.
Yeah,
you know what?
Go ahead.
What I thought was interesting was that they had like a previous medalist kind of giving some commentary on it, and one of the things she said was, you know, this is completely counter to the Olympics. People can pay good money to see these matches, and I thought that was interesting because it really just put the put it out the way it is, which is that it was about the money, you know, and certainly people were feeling ripped off. I mean, it wasn't, this isn't about Olympic spirit or whatever. It was really about the bottom line. Well, so that's kind of where we're at these days.
It is big money. I mean, they are blocking tweets and et cetera, so
keep that. Man, I was listening to, like, you know, that there's actually copyright. There's a 300-person strong copyright police team that scours London previous to the games and during to make sure certain combinations of words you cannot use. So, like, you can't put a pub sign up on your pub saying, like, come drink for the 2012 Olympics. You can only say, like, you know, come drink at my pub for the special event, right? And they have this combination of words you can't use, right?
You can't even use the word summer, for God's sake, okay? So
2012, right? Some things. I mean, it's really, like, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I haven't watched any of the events. I catch up with a little bit. I think the whole thing is just so over-commercialized. It's just, it's kind of disgusting. To me, it's totally lost its global competitive sport thing, right?
Okay. Well, let's just screw that event and let's talk about events that are up and coming, which will be much more interesting. So I understand there's a bar camp that's happening in Beijing this weekend.
Yeah, that's. I hear a lot of buzz around town about it. A lot of people are excited.
Yeah, it's organized by a buddy of mine, James Fennigan. I do not have the venue with me. Do you have the venue?
Let me look it up. I don't have it off the top of my head. Sorry.
Yeah, let me. Yeah, and so, I think this is going to be the first bar camp in Beijing. I think previously they had a couple of bar camps happening in Shanghai, so... No, this is not the first bar camp in Beijing. There was one, but then everything just became quiet after 2007. So this is sort of like a bar camp revival that is happening in Beijing. Yeah, the site is loading pretty slow, so I can't really find the venue. But yeah, if you actually search for... Go ahead.
Yeah, it looks like it's inside of Chaoyang Park, which is this massive park, you know, on the east side of Beijing, and the Hub Culture Jintai Museum.
There's a co-working space inside that museum, if I understand.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, will you be going there?
Well, I'm hoping to drop by. It's, I'll have to see how the scheduling works out. But there, you know, I have a few friends who are giving talks, and it should be interesting.
Okay, so for information about Barcamp Beijing, you can head over to barcamp-beijing.com. It's happening this weekend on the 4th and 5th of August. And actually, it's sorry, 5th of August, which is this Sunday. And in Singapore, there's going to be Make a Fair Singapore, organized by the Singapore Discovery Center, which is in association with O'Reilly Media, which is kind of, Make Magazine and etc., which is kind of weird because I don't think they actually... I think this is the first time I'm seeing they license out Maker Faire outside of the US. So it'll be quite cool to go and see several of these maker bots and 3D printers and Arduino Raspberry Pi stuff. So if you're interested in actually like hardware hacking, I think this is the place to go. You can head to Maker Faire, makerfairesingapore.com, one word... Fair is spelled F-A-I-R-E. Okay? Smitty, you won't be able to go. So any other events that you're keeping an eye on?
There's one at the end of the month. I'm going to try to go if it works out. Just depends. It's the Lean Startup Machine thing in Singapore.
Oh, yeah.
So just leanstartupmachine.com and then click on Asia and you'll get to Singapore. It's the first time doing it in Singapore. And it's going to be pretty cool. So there's a lot of cool people involved with it. So check that out. It's a three-day thing. So I'm looking into that. That's all I have. And then I think that guy's actually living in Singapore now, Daniel, so we should try to get him on.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I think he'd be a great guest to have on. And then we should also get... Isaac on. Remember, Isaac is the ex-Yahoo guy who's now working for his company called Pollinizer,
yeah,
which is an Australian incubator that's coming to Singapore. So it'd be great to get those guys on the thing. And I think Pollinizer's involved with the Lean Startup Machine event.
Yeah, so Lean Startup Machine is actually happening on the 31st of August. And well, the several mentors there... you get Gwen, Mohan Balani, and Joash, James Chan. Yeah, pretty much the whole crowd in Singapore is there. So, yeah, looking forward to actually go there. There is a what's that JavaScript thing, actually? I can't find it.
Well, there's actually kind of two, isn't there? It's kind of confusing. There's a JavaScript Asia, right?
Yeah, there's a...
And it's in October or something. Southeast Asia. Yeah, here it is. It's JavaScript, jscamp.asia.
Yes, jscamp.asia.
Yeah, and it's in November, I believe. End of November.
Okay, then we will actually keep you guys posted. I think the guy, we want to get one of the co-organizers on the show pretty soon. So.
Get Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Josh, thanks a lot for being on the show, and it's great having you. And where can our listeners actually get more on what you read, or like, are you on Twitter or something?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, so it's Beijing Dou. That's D-O-U, which means bean in Chinese. So that's also my D-O-U.
Mm-hmm.
So Beijing Dou, and that's also my Weibo.
Okay.
Handle. So I'm pretty active on Twitter. I'll be around.
Nice. And Speedy.
Yeah, where can you find me? Twitter, DreamPipe, or over on globalthing.com.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, Josh, join globalthing.com.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
I'd love to get more writers on there. So just go to globalthing.com and request membership.
Yeah. Actually bing me. You can bing me as Cervantes. I'm pretty much everywhere. I'll be in Singapore hopefully tomorrow, and hopefully in Thailand next week. So I'll see you guys around. And thanks for being on the show. For more info for This Week in Asia, you can actually visit us at www.thisweekinasia.net. Also, write a review on iTunes if you like our show. Thanks a lot. See you guys. Bye.
Later.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.